Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, our topics this time.
Yes. Rich people, are they unethical? Some interesting research that comes out of the University of California in Berkeley concerning whether or not rich or poor determines the decisions that you make. Mm-hmm. Also an interesting definition of rich. Plus, omega-3 fatty acids, the things that we find in fish, do they keep your brain healthy?
We've talked about those before. This is some new research.
New research, new data, not just on fish, but whether or not supplements really make a difference.
And what's our recipe?
Berry fruit soup, and it's berry fruity fruity.
You don't think about berries as soup very often.
No, you don't. No, you don't. But you do think about berries as something that give you pleasure.
Absolutely. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. To the phone, Zorba, and a listener with us now in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
I wanted to ask what next steps I could take here with this situation. What I'm experiencing happened suddenly about 10 years ago. Like 1 minute, I was just fine. The next minute, I started experiencing this what feels like a sore spot right down my spine. If you were to look at my back, mm-hmm. Feels like a muscle knot accompanied by slight numbness on the entire right side of my body with some weakness. Mm. I've seen a neurologist, had a nerve test about 10 years ago. They found nothing. Saw a neurologist recently about 5 years ago, had an MRI of the brain done, found nothing. I recently saw a general practitioner a few months back. He didn't think much of it, but I only told him about my numbness sensation, and he felt it was just due to stress. Mm-hmm. But suggested I can see a physical therapist.
Did you see the physical therapist?
No, I didn't, actually. So I actually have a friend who's a physical therapist. He invited me to go see him, but with my schedule and everything, I didn't quite find the time to do that, but he has invited me to go see him. So,
uh-huh. What do you do for a living?
I'm a professor.
Uh-huh. So sit at your desk, get up, what sort of, what's your day like?
I sit a lot.
Uh-huh. I mean, you know, so you sit a lot. Is it worse on days you sit, worse on days stand, worse when you're doing something? What makes it better, what makes it worse?
That's the thing I'm not quite sure about. It seems when I'm feeling a little bit more relaxed. And actually, I did point this out to my doctor that when I exercise more, maybe jog, maybe do the bike, or I'm a little bit more physically active, I tend to feel a little bit better. Uh-huh. And he said, uh-huh, so you need to exercise more. What you said.
In other words, an easy answer to figuring it out. If you feel better when you exercise, you
exactly.
exercise.
Exactly.
So now going back, do you have any episodes where you actually lose function? You're walking down the street and all of a sudden you've got weakness that's unexplained at all. Any weakness episodes?
No, nothing that really... Mm-hmm. Makes me lose function. I could still, for example, use my hands and my arms, but especially on my right side. But I feel like a little bit of almost like weakness. Like I have to a slight weakness there that it feels differently from the left side of my left arm, my left hand.
A couple thoughts on this. First of all, I think it's a neurological issue. So going in and seeing a neurologist does make a lot of sense. One of the things that always hits me that we can never quite figure out is, and you may want to get another MRI scan, is whether or not this is MS, whether or not it's multiple sclerosis. And the reason is that MS can really affect the body in a whole variety of ways, where you can have muscle weakness, you can have strange and unusual symptoms that we can't quite figure out. A negative MRI scan, especially if it was 5 years ago, doesn't really tell us a lot. It tells us you probably didn't have MS because MRIs are really good at picking that up. But 5 years later, you want to see whether or not there's something of that nature. That's one of the things that I would think about. The second thing I would think about, let's make an assumption it's negative and you don't have MS and no one's been able to figure it out. Still sounds neurological. How much does it bother you? And does it bother you at night when you go to sleep or during the daytime?
It does kind of fluctuate throughout the day. I feel better during certain times of the day than mm-hmm. others, and at night I can sleep fairly well. However, I do kind of remember during when I'm sleeping at night that my back kind of hurts me a little bit. I feel a little sore when I wake up. In my back, on my lower back.
And if it's not MS, which I think the chances are really, you know, probably 20% or 30% that it is. I think it's still more likely than it's not. There's a drug called gabapentin, G-A-B-A-P-E-N-T-I-N, gabapentin. And sometimes if you take 300 milligrams at bedtime, it gets rid of a lot of neurological symptoms, such as a pinched nerve, which is really what this sounds like. It sounds like something is pinching on a nerve somewhere in your body, and you've got this numbness and tingling because of some of these peripheral nerves, and it may be a disc, you know, that's doing that somewhere in the back. And taking gabapentin at bedtime just once a day can sometimes help that in terms of symptoms, especially since you've got the other symptoms.
Well, can I throw a lay opinion in here?
Tom, you know something? That's exactly perfect.
He mentioned getting a recommendation for a physical therapist. That sounds to me like that would at least be worth a try.
I think it's a great idea. Sure. Tom brings up a good point. And especially since you said exercise makes it better, that you may be, A, doing something wrong when you exercise, and B, you could do something right when you exercise. Mm-hmm. And physical therapists are trained to look at your body, how you walk, what your gait is, and so on. Yeah. So I think you should take up your friend on his offer.
Thank you. Thanks
so much.
Appreciate
the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. To Allentown, Pennsylvania now, Zorba. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I drive a truck for a living, and I had a physical not too long ago. I am 5'11". I weigh 273 pounds, and I have an 18-inch neck. Supposedly, there's new DOT requirements to state that if I have a 17-inch neck or more at my weight, I need to take a sleep apnea test. So as you know, sleep apnea tests are very expensive. I don't have any other signs of sleep apnea. My question is, what I've decided to do, I called the doctor back and asked him, how much weight do I need to lose in 90 days? Because he only gave me a 90-day card, which means that in 90 days I either have to take a sleep apnea test or do something, or I can't drive a commercial vehicle. So I've chosen to take on the task of losing 30 pounds in 90 days. And what I've done is I have done a strict fruit and vegetable diet, and I have been walking 2 to 2.5 miles every day. My question to Dr. Zorba is that healthy? Can I lose 30 pounds in 90 days, and what might you suggest?
Well, first of all, it is healthy to lose weight, always healthy to lose weight. And the issue with the DOT and these new things about measuring the neck and then looking at your height and looking at your weight is that it puts you in the category of more likely to have sleep apnea. In other words, you're right. You may not have it. You know, you can't tell really because you're sleeping. So when you're sleeping, you can't tell if you're not breathing at all. You know, but their idea is we're going to catch everyone, just like we're going to do pap tests on women. And then any pap test that's abnormal, we're going to biopsy. Any body that's abnormal and looks like it's at risk for sleep apnea, we're going to take care of because of, you know, because it's a big problem on the road. Now, getting back to your diet. It's not just fruits and vegetables, although it's a great idea. You must pay attention to calories. You won't lose weight unless you pay attention to calories. You could lose it in 90 days. Absolutely, you could do it. It's hard to do, not easy to do. But calories count. Calories count, calories count. It always boils down to that. Calories in, exercise out. So you could eat all the fruit you want to, and you won't lose weight because you'll be eating too much in the way of fruit. So here's what you do. I want you to read labels, and I want you to look up what you have. So you've got access, computer access, through either a smartphone in your rig or when you're home, correct?
Actually, no.
You don't? Okay.
I don't have any of those things.
Okay, so what you've got to do if you don't have that is you've got to go and get a calorie book, and you've got to look up things. In every grocery store in the United States of America, there are calorie books, and they're at the checkout counter just when people are checking out. They're usually little books. Sometimes they're big books. You want to pick a book that you like going to any grocery store, and you want to pick something that's reasonable that's going to give you the calories and the fruits and the vegetables that you're eating. So how many calories a day? Have you looked up calories at all?
No. My only thing I've concentrated on is just losing the weight. And what I've focused on is eating very little.
Mm-hmm. Good idea. Good idea.
And exercising very much.
Excellent. But you want it when you're looking at fruits. Now, vegetables have hardly any calories. That's the reality is of it. You put on your salad, you're putting on a salad dressing?
I use oil and vinegar now.
Okay. So what you want to do when you're looking at salad dressing, oil and vinegar or anything else, regular vinegar has no calories. Balsamic vinegar has some calories. Oil has 100 calories per tablespoonful. So if you're using 2 tablespoonfuls of oil, you're getting 200 calories. What I call hidden calories. They're not there. So for salad, a good example is you salt and pepper the salad. Take a lot of salt, take a lot of pepper, put it all around the salad, put on as much vinegar, regular vinegar, as you want to, and then drizzle the oil. And be careful how much you're drizzling, and that'll make a difference. Or conversely, go to the store. I looked up Paul Newman balsamic, low-fat balsamic dressing the other day, and it was 15 calories for 2 tablespoonfuls. In other words, you can get a commercial salad dressing that you like that has very, very few calories that you'll find useful on the road. Because, you know, on the road, finding good food isn't easy.
Right.
You know that as a trucker. But, yes, you can do this, but you got to get a calorie book. You got to look up the things that you're eating because, as you said, you don't want to have the expensive test. And I think you can do it. Congratulations on losing weight.
Thank you. Thank
you're welcome.
Dr.
Do call, yeah, call us back. Let us know what happens.
Okay, I will do that.
Thanks a lot. Not that it would be right, but couldn't you kind of cheat on the neck by stretching your neck out?
Maybe, but an inch is a lot to cheat. An inch would be very hard to do.
It would. Okay.
Yeah, an inch would be hard to do unless, Tom, you were a giraffe.
Well, might be hard to do if you're a giraffe, too. I don't.
It'd be hard to drive.
So what's this research on rich people?
Rich people cheat.
And cheating?
That's what it is. Rich people cheat. Well, that's the bottom line of the story.
Because they can.
Because they can get away from it. This came out of the University of California in Berkeley. Yeah. Came out from Cal, one of my favorite schools. And it's interesting. So what do you think they defined as rich?
I have no idea.
Money would be
one
way.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, what's another way you define as rich?
I don't know. If you don't have money, you aren't rich.
Occupational prestige.
Well, that goes with
they
money.
Defined as
that
rich.
Goes with money.
Education.
Yeah, that goes with money, too. I mean, to some extent.
Well, some people have an high occupational prestige and education, but they're not rich, right?
No. I mean, compared to on a national average, you can't have a high education and prestige and not be somewhat
that's right.
wealthy.
However— You can be rich and not have high occupational prestige.
Yeah, that's true.
The opposite is definitely true.
I was about to say the name of a well-known real estate casino owner.
That's right. That's exactly.
I'll just leave that
we're
alone.
We're going to stay away. This is a medical show, Tom. Right. It is not politics. But anyway, they looked at a few things. So first of all, they were as I said, they had some definitions that weren't there. So one of their definitions were people who drove more expensive cars. Okay. Now, that in some ways doesn't mean you're rich because you may just go out and do that, but that was one way.
Yeah.
And they looked and they did an analysis of cutting people off.
Yeah.
So guess who cuts people off more, people with more expensive cars or cheaper cars?
Well, I'm going to say more expensive because that's what we're talking about
yes,
here.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Now, I don't think this holds true everywhere. Remember, this was done in California, and I have to tell you why. I have a little Miata that's 22 years old. It's a little sports car.
Yeah.
I normally drive a Honda CR-V, which I happen to like, and I've driven a Honda hatchback. But in the spring, I bring out my little Miata. As soon as I start to drive it, I notice that people want to get in front of my car and cut me off.
Oh.
Because I'm in a sports car. It's like I'm driving down the road and people try to go faster than I am. I'm really not paying attention.
So they get competitive.
Yes, they get more competitive in Wisconsin.
Now, are those rich people cutting you off?
No, everybody. Everybody. Doesn't matter if they're rich or poor.
Yeah.
So I think the expensive cars cut people off. But then they gave them a variety of psychological tests of people who are students, people who are poor economically, and people who are richer economically. And the test was if you do such and such a thing, you'll get a $50 gift certificate. And then they were allowed to cheat on the test. In other words, they were given clues. They weren't told they were cheating, but they were allowed to cheat. So you would be told, hey, look underneath here and you'll find an answer, you know something that you can just imagine how it was. They found out people who had more money were more likely to cheat on the test.
Yeah. Now,
and cheat in negotiations when they were doing negotiations.
Okay. Now, here's the question.
Okay. Here's the question.
Does this mean that people who naturally cheat are more likely to get rich? Or does it mean that people who are rich are more likely to cheat?
That's the million-dollar question. That's the $64,000 question. And you know what? This study doesn't answer that.
1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, to a listener now in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I just turned 42, and I'm trying to get pregnant, so I know I'm old. however, I have a friend who is advising me that eating whole wheat and dairy may be preventing me from conceiving. And the whole thing for me is I thought whole grains and low-fat dairy and things like that were healthy. So, you know, for me, I'm not a big meat eater, and I don't drink milk. I know from Wisconsin, not drinking milk, that's a bad thing. But but I do use lower-fat cheeses and yogurt as sources of calcium and protein for me. And when I go online, there's so much contradictory information about what is okay for me. Even using lotion, if you want to conceive, is supposedly bad, too. So I guess I would just really appreciate some advisement on things that I thought were healthy, the whole grain thing and the low-fat dairy thing. Is that, could that be stopping me from conceiving?
Can I ask how long you've been trying?
Just under a year. I'm a newlywed.
Okay. Well, first of all, 80% of, I want to go back to the numbers, about 80% of the couples conceive at the end of a year, roughly. And then you take those other 20%, you put them out another year, and about half of them conceive. Now, that's globally. That's not with an older, you know, with a woman who's older and trying to conceive. Those numbers are less. You know, you're more fertile at 18 than you are at 42. So you go on the web, you're going to find everything about why you're not conceiving. Frankly, you're not as likely to conceive at 42.
Right.
The age is the predictor more than anything else. So are you menstruating on a regular basis?
Yes.
Okay. Were you on birth control pills prior to this or any hormonal pills to prevent that?
Not immediately prior to our trying, but probably over a year before that.
Okay. Has your husband had his sperm tested?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What are his numbers? Good numbers?
Very good.
Okay. So he's got... Notice how she said that with pride.
Yes.
it wasn't at first. Motility was bad.
Yeah, but then little swimmers got up there and we're doing a good job. Okay. Okay.
And I've had an ultrasound and I've had a blood panel to check my hormones.
And everything looks good?
Yep, everything looks good.
Okay. Now, do you menstruate every 28 days?
Yes.
You're more likely to conceive on roughly on day 14, as you know, and you know that already.
Yep.
Are you having sex every day around that time or every other day?
Well, my doctor recommended that on my ovulation day, which is 14 days after, that we do that day 3 days before and 3 days after.
You might want to go to every other day versus 3 days. But every other day does make a difference versus every day. Every day those little swimmers are just not ready yet. So every other day can make a difference. And frankly, the sperm being there when the egg pops makes it more likely that you're actually going to conceive. That's what I would do. And what I would do is stop reading the net.
I know. It's
Shut
terrible.
It off. Pull the plug.
It's adding stress to the process.
You don't need that stress. You don't need it at all.
That's so
Only
true.
Get your information from public radio.
Which is where I get most of it, so thank you.
Yeah, really, really good luck to you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And before we take a short break, Zorba, let's play another round of Stump the Doc. Our contestant today is Sheila from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, who has a mystery she'd like your input on. Sheila writes, I am a 32-year-old with type 2 diabetes. I am very well controlled. My A1C ranges from 5.1 to 5.3. I monitor my blood glucose 2 to 3 times a day with a blood glucose meter. I normally test with my middle or ring finger in my left hand. My husband does not believe me that my blood glucose levels are so good, so he suggested I use my right hand to test, so I pulled out another testing strip and tested. the meter result for the right hand was 100 points higher than what the left hand results were. So for the following 3 days, I tested the left and the right hand, and each time the right hand would result 30, 50, even 100 points higher than the left. What gives, Doc? Am I using the wrong fingers and testing wrong?
Well, first of all, very interesting. Let's look at what really counts. Hemoglobin A1C, that first number. The goal with a diabetic is really to get it around 7 for most diabetics. The older diabetic, around 8. 5.2 is dynamite. That's the 30-day. That means your 90-day, rather, batting average is really, really good. And you don't have to test 3 times a day. That is over-testing. If you've got a hemoglobin A1C that good, and you're unless you're injecting, if you're on pills especially, once a day is fine. There are diabetologists which will disagree with me and say test numerously throughout the day. But the answer is if you're in control, you don't have to test as much. I mean, that's the bottom line. Now, what's the difference between the right and left hand? I don't have the foggiest idea. I don't know why that's happening, but that's why we don't depend on finger sticks. We depend on actual blood glucose that we take in a vein out of the body when you're actually getting tested, because it's more accurate. Mm-hmm. It's possible that one hand may be more fatigued and you're using it versus the other. What I would recommend that you do is you leave both hands, you sit for about 5 minutes before you test. You make sure that there's nothing constricting on the right or left hand. Use the finger on the right hand, check it again, and see what happens. But if not, you're the horse of a different color.
Yeah.
I can't give you the answer, but I bet you one of our listeners will tell you why that difference
should
occur.
Should she believe the right hand or the left hand?
She should believe the hemoglobin A1C, because that's what counts.
Ah.
And that says her blood sugar is in control, and stop testing 3 times a day. It's too much, unless you're using insulin. That's different.
If you have a health or lifestyle mystery wrapped in an enigma, let us help. Send your Stump the Doc questions to us in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a recipe coming up, lots more of your calls too, another interesting topic to talk over, and of course our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. We have callers waiting, but a line open for you at 800-462-7413. Recipe time now, Zorba, and then we'll get back to the phones. This recipe for berry fruit soup.
That's right. Obviously, this is not a main course, right?
Right. It's a soup.
It's a soup. And we think of soup all the time as warm, but basically this is a fruity soup that you're probably going to eat at the end of the meal.
Yeah.
You know, something.
Yeah.
You're going to have it for a treat, for a dessert, sort of like a pudding.
Yeah. And usually I don't like cold soup, but I think I might like this one.
Because it's sweet, and you're a sweet person. And
I have
when
I'm a sweet person.
You're
too.
A sweet person.
When, thank you.
When
Zoe.
Everyone says Tom Clark, the first thing
you
say,
absolutely,
he's so
absolutely
sweet. You know, pushover. Yeah. Doesn't have strong opinions.
The opposite of curmudgeon.
The opposite of curmudgeon.
That's
right.
Me.
The opposite of curmudgeon. That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And keep taking your Thorazine and you'll be just fine.
Okay. Let's do the recipe.
Okay. So you, of course, can use fresh fruit, but it all depends on the time of the year. In this case, fresh fruit is harder to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
1/2 pound of frozen unsweetened strawberries.
1/2 pound of frozen unsweetened strawberries.
You know, it's in the bag, 8 ounces. You know, so they come in little, you know, 1/2 pound bags. 1/2 pound of frozen unsweetened raspberries.
And 1/2 pound of frozen unsweetened raspberries.
Okay, now we're going to sweeten it. Now, what can we use? Let me give a couple of examples. We can use 3 tablespoonfuls of Splenda.
Okay, 3 big teaspoons Splenda.
And that's what I would use. I think Splenda is okay. I think it's safe. I agree with the FDA. It's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who disagree and say, say they don't want to use Splenda, you could use 3 tablespoonfuls of honey. Mm-hmm. It'll change the taste of it.
Right.
That would be good. You could use Stevia, which is the new kid on the block, and Stevia is very good. Mm-hmm. It has not quite the bitter aftertaste that saccharin has, but it doesn't have the sweet sort of aftertaste that regular sugar has. You could use the equivalent of 3 tablespoonfuls of Stevia, which I believe would be about 3 packets or 3 teaspoons. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to do, you need a little sweetener in this.
Yeah, well, how much harm would it do to just put 3 big tea sugar in there?
Well, not much harm at all. That would be 45 times 3. You would add about 120 calories divided by 4. You'd add another 30 calories to this, roughly.
Per serving.
Yeah, that's not very much. 30,
okay.
You know, 30 calories is not worth very much at all. 1 lemon cut into wedges divided.
A lemon cut into wedges divided.
Okay, 1 tablespoonful of ground cinnamon.
Big tea, ground cinnamon.
Now, with cinnamon, I recommend buying cinnamon only in small packages. Mm-hmm. And the reason is when you buy it in large packages, you're more likely to keep it forever. And it really
it goes
loses,
bad.
It
yeah.
just loses that. It loses that really good cinnamon taste. 1/4 teaspoon of salt.
1/4 little tea salt.
1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract. Do not use artificial vanilla.
1/2 tea vanilla extract.
1/4 cup of skim milk.
1/4 cup skim milk.
And you're going to use some low-fat yogurt to garnish.
Okay.
So let's make it. Combine the berries, Splenda, 2 lemon wedges, cinnamon, salt, vanilla, and milk in a large saucepan. Bring it to a boil. Stir the sugar until it dissolves, or the Splenda. Then reduce the heat to simmer and simmer for 15 minutes or so until the berries are soft. Then remove the lemon wedges and puree the broth in batches, either in a blender or in a food processor. Mm-hmm. I'd probably use a blender. That'll be much easier, and that's always on the shelf in my house. Transfer the blended soup to a large bowl and refrigerate it until it's thoroughly chilled, completely chilled. Then divide the soup into 4 small bowls, garnish each one with a lemon wedge, and put on a dollop of yogurt. And you know, if you had some fresh mint around, I'd probably put a little sprig of fresh mint.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like this would look very pretty.
It would look pretty.
Probably
and, you know what? And you know what? My daughter Vanessa always likes to say that, you know, presentation is really a very important part of serving stuff at home. And I agree. I'm not good at presentation. I've learned a lot over the years, but just like you use nice silverware and nice dishes, this would be a wonderful thing to take out the refrigerator at the end of a meal when you have company over.
I wonder what it would taste like if I heated it up.
I don't know. It's really a cold soup. It would probably be very interesting here, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's very interesting. I used to have beet borscht, and that was sweet, and I liked it, but that's another recipe. We won't do that recipe at all. Calories, 94 calories per serving. Like I said, if you put sugar in this instead, it's going to only be 120, 130 calories. Mm-hmm. Not very much. Easy recipe to do, and I would recommend that you try it.
And if I'd like a copy of this recipe.
That's right. That's right. If you want a copy, it's really easy. Go to the website.
I can't get a copy, really, on the website.
Of course you can.
I could copy it, Colin. Yeah, I could, of course.
The whole thing. At ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can look through other recipes. You can see pictures of Tom and I. You can browse through the archives that we have there, and you can download it. Again, that's ZorbaPastor.org. And, oh, don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
Our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. To the phones again, Zorba, with a listener in College Station, Texas now. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, what's up?
Okay, I have had 3 pregnancies very close together. And I have developed a diastasis in my transverse abdominals where the muscles have separated. I'm wondering if there's a way to repair that.
Yeah, Zorba, before she goes, before you answer, what is she talking about?
Well, there's a separation. If you do a sit-up, you've got this little indentation, essentially, in your tummy. So that when did that happen? That happened after your pregnancy?
Yes, after the first one and just progressively got worse with each one.
Yeah, what'd your doctor say?
Just that I have it.
That's right. We don't have a great way of really fixing that. I mean, ultimately, you know, the plastic surgeons, the last time I read, were not very good at actually repairing this, and it's not something that cosmetically you like. Is that what you've noticed?
Definitely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So your doctor didn't say, look, we can repair this and send you somewhere.
They said potentially it could be repaired through some sort of exercise.
Yeah.
But they were not very clear what type of exercise.
Yeah, exactly. You know something? Unfortunately, I've not looked at exercises doing a tremendous amount for this. You know, it's what we always say, do exercise, and that'll help firm up those muscles. But I haven't seen a lot that actually does it. That separation, last time I did research on it, it didn't show that it was highly effective. There may be some new techniques that are out there. But it would be a plastic surgical technique that you'd have to pay for. In other words, it would not be covered by insurance, most likely. I never answer insurance questions, but this is one of those things that sounds to me like it's a plastic surgical repair. And that's about the best that you have. Unfortunately, it's just one of the side effects of pregnancy.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your time.
I wish I had a better answer for you. I wish I had a magic bullet. But like I said, and the repair for something like this would be expensive. And how effective it is, last time I looked at the effectiveness 5 years down the line, it wasn't that effective.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Good to know.
Well, thanks for the call.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413.
You know, the problem with pregnancies and that happen is that for a woman, obviously, who gets pregnant, it can change your body. So you can have striae, which are stretch marks. Some women have huge stretch marks. Some women have very small stretch marks. And what's the difference? How do you prevent them? They're just – some women get them. Some women do not get them. After a pregnancy, some women, their tummy goes back pretty much to normal, doesn't look very stretched at all. But other women, their tummy becomes very flabby. And in this case, really, the separation of the muscle is cosmetically just unpleasant to look at. And unfortunately, it's a cosmetic thing, so insurance doesn't cover it. And the repairs are not that good.
Yeah. 800-462-7413. And a caller with us now, Zorba, in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and for most of her life, she has had constipation. It seems to be just about never ending. Part of it was, you know, her choice. She's always, like all kids, loves the cheese sticks and loves pretzels and, you know, toast and the things, you know, and bananas and things that have a tendency to cause it. But even when her diet has changed, I'm just curious if there is something that is that common. This is my 8th child, 5th daughter. I have not had this before. It is just never, it seems to be that it's, there's not 2 weeks that go by when she doesn't have it. And again, we try, my wife has started giving her a tablespoon of Maalox.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if Maalox is really the best thing to give her. First of all, from a food point of view, raisins, does she eat raisins at all?
Not very often.
I highly recommend raisins, and I highly recommend bran cereal. So raisin bran is great. Try to get her to eat raisin bran. However, you have to sweeten it so that she'll eat it. And that can make a really big difference to your daughter. That's number one. Number two, I would not recommend Maalox, but I would recommend that you try to give her small amounts of something called Miralax. Miralax, if she'll take it, does a great job. It is not a stimulative cathartic. Your body doesn't come habituated to it. Stimulative cathartics like Ex-Lax are bad. Something like Miralax simply will keep fluid in the bowels. And frankly, if you can get your daughter to take the Miralax once or twice a day until she gets older and she starts to vary her diet, that might be the way to do it.
You mentioned raisins. Why not prunes?
Prunes would be okay too. Kids won't generally eat prunes because they're kind of – they feel funny and the texture is funny. They're kind of greasy.
They taste good, though.
For an adult, they taste good, but not for a kid. But kids will eat raisins out of those little boxes especially. They'll eat raisins all the time. So I'd recommend roughage with raisins. Miralax is a great way to do it. Having her just take some Miralax once or twice a day, that'll be okay. Get her through this. Usually as they get older, their diet will become more varied. And try to reduce the milk that she drinks because milk is also an issue. Milk and cheese. Good luck, and let us know what happens.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your program.
You're most welcome. Thank you for the call.
We appreciate it. And Zorba, before we take another short break, let's go through another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's email comes to us from Larry in Dubuque, Iowa, who happens to be a professor emeritus in mathematics. Larry, or Dr. Larry, takes issue with some of your recent advice on mono testing. Writing, Dr. Zorba, On a past program, you commented to a caller that a rarely used test for mononucleosis was to take one test, recording observed data, then repeating the test in a few weeks to see if the data had increased exponentially. Any two data points could exhibit exponential growth, but also, as Euclid told you, any two points determine a straight line. In order to determine if data represents exponential growth, you need more than two data points. Kind of sounds like the old phrase, two wrongs don't make a right, which led the comedian Gallagher to claim that three rights will make a left. But what about that 2 point as opposed to 3 points on a chart?
No, I like three rights will make a left. You know, I think he's dead. Yeah. What we're actually looking for is whether or not his point is a mathematical point of whether or not something is exponential. You can't determine that with simply two numbers. My point is whether or not you see a major jump in the test. So sometimes the mono test might be negative and the next test is positive, or the first mono test will say might be X and the second test might be 2X
or 3X.
But then
the third point might still disprove the first second point.
No, it's not the way antibodies work in the body. The third point doesn't go down like that. And we talk about increasing exponentially when sometimes the number is doubled or tripled or quadrupled. Yeah. So I'm using a different definition of exponential, which is not the mathematical definition, but is really the common definition, which means a major elevation.
Okay, so don't trust a mathematician.
Don't. That's right. Don't trust a mathematician who makes jokes.
That actually was our joke, not his joke, the Gallagher. If you disagree with Zorba's advice or how his advice translates to bar graphs, let us know during our next edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Just send your rebuttal to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around for some more interesting research. More of your calls coming up if you'd like to join in. We have our medical myth buster, too, in this hour, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, new research, Zorba, on fish oil.
Yes. We know that fish is healthy for us. We've known that for quite a long time. And we know that people eat fish have less heart disease, less stroke. And there's some other things about fish that may be good. And there are nutrients that are not found in fish that are also found in nuts, by the way. And these are nutrients, DHA and EPA, which are very good. This was an article looking at cognitive function, the ability to think, and brain volumes. Now, brain volumes don't really predict a lot. In other words, when we get older, our brains shrink. They get smaller. But we don't get more stupid when our brains shrink.
But can't you do an X-ray and tell whether a brain has high volume or is losing?
Well, you can't do a volume, but it doesn't correspond to – you can't say, oh, their volume – you know, her volume is big. She must be thinking well. Her volume is small. She must be not be thinking well. The volume does not correspond to a lot.
Okay. All right.
It's not really a predictor, but it's one of the markers that things may be going on for bad. And it happens with age. All of our brains shrink. Yeah. We shrink as we get older, and our brain is no different than every other thing in our bodies that will tend to shrink. However, cognitive function is something completely different. In other words, we measure how we think. And this was from the Framingham cohort study. This is the study, part of the Framingham Heart Study. They looked at a whole bunch of participants in the study between 2005 and 2008, about 1,500 people. Average age was 65, 66, so that's when we begin to lose cognitive function. No one had dementia at the beginning of the the study. And what they looked at is they looked at people who took higher levels of omega-3, often from supplements. And then they measured brain volume, and they measured something called white matter. And then they measured cognitive function, in other words, how they were thinking. And lo and behold, people who had less DHA and EPA from supplements tended to have their visual memory was not as good. Their executive function, the ability to make decisions, wasn't as good. Abstract thinking wasn't as good. Language and verbal fluency didn't change at all. But some of these other things that really measure function did change. So, you know, I think this is important research.
So eating fish is a really good thing, but almost all of us don't eat enough fish. So maybe supplements would be good.
Well, and I think it's kind of a compliment. First of all, find a fish you like. Now, in my house, fish was smelt. And let me tell you, smelt is really not a delicious fish. And my mother never knew how to prepare it. So, A, find a fish you like. Try to eat fish once or twice a week. That's number one. But number two, supplements.
Wouldn't it be better to have fatty fish than non-fatty fish?
Salmon is better, but we know that people who eat fish are healthier. But also, fish supplements, fish oil supplements high in DHA and EPA can make a big difference, and consume them daily.
800-462-7413, the number to call. And Zorba, here's a Spokane, Washington listener with us now. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Yes, I was calling to ask if there is a sort of a limitation on shark cartilage supplements a person should take. I see that, you know, being touted as helpful for joint problems and osteoarthritis, things like that. And I've sort of been taking it for the past about 3 months or so, and I've noticed a huge difference, except I don't know how much is safe or if it's safe at all.
Mm-hmm. So your joints feel better now? What sort of?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to have a lot of aches, you know, from my joints in the mornings and uh-huh. stuff. And I don't have those anymore.
Wow, that's great. That's really wonderful. There are a couple of things about the supplements. Number one, you've got to buy a good brand. So how do you know if you're buying a good brand? You can't tell from the label. How did you choose the brand you bought?
Well, I just saw it on the shelf at, you know, a natural food store. And, you know, on the cover it said, you know, try it out. Mm-hmm. We'll give you a money-back guarantee, you know, so that caught my eye.
So, and so basically it was the advertising of the bottle. I mean, like, which is how most of us do when we're picking something out.
Yeah.
I would not recommend that you do that. So, number one, I'd recommend that you choose a shark cartilage, that you either go to one of two sites. You go to Consumer Labs, consumerlabs.org. It's either .org or .com. What they do is they look at all the shark cartilages, they measure them, and they recommend which one they think is the best.
Okay.
And I would highly recommend you do that. Now, it costs money to go to their website. So it costs $10 or I think it maybe costs $4 for a month and $10 or $20 for the year. But anyone taking a supplement should make sure their supplement has been tested, because the FDA does not guarantee testing. And the quality is very poor of supplements on the whole. So one day you might get a bottle which has, we'll say, 100% of the supplement. And the next time you might only get 50% of the supplement. It's very, very poor. Poorly controlled by our government. So consumerlabs.org or consumerlabs.com, wonderful site. Pay the money. Only use the shark cartilage they recommend, period.
Okay.
Because then, you know, then, and they recommend a variety. It's not just one, and it's a pay-as-you-go. They don't get any advertising. That's number one. Number two, we don't know what the optimal amount is, but when you go to Consumer Labs, what they'll do is they'll have a printout of what they talk about as the lowest amount and the highest amount. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but I like their data. I like their research. I think there are no long-term negative consequences about these. But one of the things I caution you about all supplements that have to do with the joints, you want to see if they continue to work. For some people, they'll work for 3 or 4 months and they don't work. And it's really the placebo effect that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. And for other people, they'll work for years, which I think is really the drug, the supplement effect. So just be aware that you're, you know, it's always hard to separate out body from mind. But if you're going to continue with it, get one that you know has as much shark cartilage as it says on the label.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. Today's myth deals with time on the job. We know a lot of folks dislike their jobs, but can logging too many hours on the clock actually lead to depression?
And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Now, you know, some things that are not obvious happen, and some things that are obvious do happen in all of the, you know, all of the formulations thereof. But the answer is yes. People, there have been a number of studies that have shown this, especially studies that have looked, we'll say, long-term studies, mm-hmm. people who work in white-collar jobs, looked at long jobs. And once you get to about 10 or 11 hours a day, especially if you're working 5 days a week, it's mm-hmm. not just the hours of a day, it's the hours in a week. And we know that people who work 50 to 60 hours in a week are more likely to get depressed, and people who have to work 12-hour days.
It would seem to me that it would make a difference if you like the job and not like
it. Absolutely, 100%. And, you know, you bring up a point because physicians work long hours, but mm-hmm. but depression is less than the general population.
Yeah.
And it's really because, on the whole, physicians like their jobs, yeah. I think.
Interesting.
I think that's really what the case is. Yeah, so job satisfaction plays a role, but so is length. 60 hours a week, do that for year after year after year, or 12-hour days, and you've got to work it 5 days a week, it gets to be old.
Yeah. How much time do we have before the end of this hour? I'm starting to feel
too much time. I'm getting overwhelmed, Tom.
This job is going to do me in.
I'm getting overwhelmed.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to work overtime on? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413,
you know,
I told
what Franklin. Was that Tennessee Ernie Ford song? 16 tons and what do you get?
Another day older.
Another day and older deeper and deeper in debt. It's a wonderful song for those of you who are old enough to remember.
Exactly. A Madison, Wisconsin caller with us now, Zorba. Hi.
Hi, Tom and Zorba. I have a question for you about a sunshine simulator that I own. It's called a Happy Light. And I was wondering, do I need to wear sunscreen when I run the Happy Light?
That's really funny. That's funny. That's happy. That makes me happy. The Happy Light doesn't make you tan. So you're looking at the Happy Light.
Yeah.
I love it, Happy Light, which is a bright light, I take it, for seasonal affective disorder. It does not have UVA or UVB. It is not a suntan, because if you needed to wear sunscreen, you would be tan from the Happy Light. Now, when I was a teenager, I sat in front of a Happy Light, but it made me tan, which I thought looked really good. And everyone in my family sat in front of a Happy Light. But no, so tell me a bit about your Happy Light. Has it worked for you?
It has. I was living in northern Wisconsin, and it gets pretty gloomy up there, especially if you're not near a lake and the sun isn't out. The sun reflects off the ice, which makes it pretty bright. But if you're not near a lake, it's kind of gloomy. And my mother got it for me, and I kind of thought it was a lot of hooey. And I started using it, and I noticed that my mood perked up.
No, I don't think it's hooey at all. I notice it at all. For me, it's seasonal affective disorder, and it affects me around November, beginning of November until around the first week in January, first or second week in January. Then it disappears for me. And I have purchased one of these lights myself, and I find it very effective. You obviously cannot do a double-blind study on a light. I mean, it doesn't exist. That happens, you know. But people say that it works for them, and I'm pretty skeptical. I think it works for me, and it works for me when I travel internationally, and I have to go through a number of time zones. It helps me catch up. So continue with your Happy Light.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
And before we punch out for the week, Zorba, I want to share this strange parcel with you that showed up in our Zorba Pastor on Your Health mailbox.
Okay.
After checking for suspicious white powders, Adam opened the package marked fragile and found a homemade pill splitter mailed in from Claude in Cudahy, Wisconsin. Now, Claude had heard our recent discussion on pill splitting and sent in his invention along with the instructions, complete with diagrams. So, let's give it a go. First of all, we had a trouble figuring out whether the packaging or the pill splitter went together or not.
Yes, okay.
And they don't. I took off the
packaging,
and what's left is a simple cork.
Okay, simple cork.
With a
slit. Okay, with a slit.
In in one end. Claude instructs, a paper towel under the pill will keep it from turning or skittering away. The physics of a traditional razor splitter almost ensures an uneven, dusty cut because the point pressure veers at an angle, not straight down. This isn't funny. This is a really good invention.
It's not funny.
In contrast,
I shouldn't be laughing. I'm so
that's
sorry.
True.
Sorry.
In contrast, the legs of the cork splitter push down and away, giving an even split.
Okay. In my language, the pill splitter
usually has a razor blade that splits the pill. The cork has a groove in it so that the pressure is on the outside of the pill rather than in the, on the inside.
And we're going to take a YouTube.
We have an ibuprofen, which I should say is not usually a splittable pill. It's not one that's made for splitting. But let's see if we can make this work. I've tried it, and when I tried it on this same kind of pill, it worked quite well.
Okay.
So the idea is you put the cork over the pill, push down.
Push really hard. Yeah, see.
Let's see if I can make it split.
Yeah, and there's no razor in here either. It's no razor. There! I heard it. Let's look at it. Oh, lo and behold, it split perfectly in half. Absolutely awesome. Incredible. Let me see it for a second.
Yeah, there's just a cork with a...
Now, I have a question. Did Claude give us his last name? You said Claude.
I don't have it.
Oh, I'm taking this to the patent office.
I'm just hoping...
I'm heading over to the patent office, baby.
I was gonna say, I hope Claude has a patent in this. And
I don't
if you dare
so.
Do that, have, Claude's going to sue.
That's right. By the way, have you noticed what it says on this homemade cork?
No, I didn't.
The naked grape.
Well, it sounds like a wine cork to me. Have an invention you'd think would be good for the show? Make sure you patent it first so Adam doesn't steal it, and then send it to the show or Zorba doesn't steal it. Send your questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Or you can find us on Facebook. And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer, Adam Friedrich, and our technical director, Brad Kohlberg, are the two guys on the other side of the glass responsible for this hour. And you will be relieved to know that we finally run out of silly names to call our executive producer and our technical director. Our theme music is...
Wait a second. I'm not relieved about that at all. I mean, the creative process is important. I don't think we've run it out of that all. I think, you know what's happened? They just don't have enough names. We need funny names from our listeners to be able to give our producers and engineer.
Didn't I thank you for being here this week and send you on your way about 45 seconds ago?
Didn't.
Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran for Zorba Pastor, who's well gone by now. I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0310Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.